Well, welcome to tonight's class. This is class number 6 in our sequence, so we're a little bit off schedule. I sent out an email, but we had some technical difficulties, and I was away, and then class 6 disappeared into the ether. It got recorded as nothing but silence, and we don't know why, but we tested the system today, and it worked, so hopefully everything is back on track, and this will work out fine. Tonight's class is on personal nutrition. So far, we've talked about nutrition. We've really talked about general rules. And tonight is the night where we're going to focus in on how do you eat right for you. So I'm going to super briefly touch back on the general nutrition principles we've talked about, which I think will be very familiar by now. And then we're going to dive into, within the umbrella of those general principles, what's right for your body. So the two big general principles are, of course, eat whole foods and the diet of abundance. And I think we all understand those by now. Whole foods are the intact foods that are true to nature. And the idea of diet of abundance is don't focus on not eating bad stuff. It's fill your life with happy food. So it's have salad dressings made in the fridge, and it's have cut up vegetables, and have pre-made salads and pre-made stir fries and cuts of grilled chicken and grilled salmon, and make this stuff in bulk whenever you can so that you have a life that is replete with easy access, healthy, tasty options. And then don't ever think about what you're not supposed to eat. And in point of fact, don't try to resist food that you think is bad for you, like I won't eat chocolate. Instead think, why don't I fill up on something I really want that's good for me? And always pivot in that direction. Don't ever try to deprive yourself. Keep pivoting in the direction of filling up on natural, healthy, whole foods that are super good for you. So those are our two umbrella concepts for general nutrition. When it comes to personalized nutrition, we're going to have to learn a little bit more about what actually makes up food for the concept of personal nutrition to make sense. And I think this is good information to have because the language of food is out there in our culture, and I don't think we're taught very much about it. We have sort of a general sense, so I think it's useful life information, and then we're going to take this information and narrow in on the question, how do you figure out what's perfect for your body? Okay. So the energy in food comes in three main varieties. And those varieties are carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. And we all know these words. But we want to understand a little bit about what carbohydrates, fats, and proteins really are. They're all energy molecules. So carbohydrates are rapidly burning, easily digested sources of energy, and really they only provide energy. Your body doesn't use carbohydrates for much beyond energy, with a few uninteresting exceptions. So you get carbohydrates naturally from foods like beans and whole grains and starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes or potatoes, and you get carbohydrates from fruits. And sugars are a type of carbohydrate, and then there are other carbohydrates that are called complex carbohydrates. They're the longer chain, slower digesting carbohydrates, and that's what you find in the beans and the whole grains. And we tend to favor those slower digesting complex carbohydrates. So carbohydrates is one category of the nutrients in food that actually provide energy. The next category is protein. And proteins are not only energy, but they're actually building blocks. So your body is made out of a lot of protein. Your muscles are made of protein. A lot of your organs are made of protein. So proteins are both structural molecules and they're energy molecules. The body uses protein for energy, but it also uses it to make stuff. And there's protein in virtually every type of food. It's very hard to find foods that don't have proteins. But the richest sorts of proteins do tend to be meats. So chicken, fish, beef, lamb, these are all high protein foods. You also find protein to a lesser degree in nuts and seeds. You find protein in beans. You find a little bit of protein in whole grains. And there's some protein hanging out in vegetables too, like broccoli has a reasonable amount of protein and some other vegetables have protein. And fruits have very, 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 very little protein. The third energy molecule is fat. And fats are also sort of structural and sort of energy. So you use fats to build cell walls, and you need fats, and a lot of your body is made out of fat in a good way. And then, of course, the body fat that we store that we don't want is made out of fat. It's the same fat that we eat. In point of fact, it's really interesting. A lot of the body fat that you store is actually of the same molecular consistency as the body fat that you eat. So if a scientist looks at your body fat, they can say, oh, here you go. You eat about 20% olive oil and 21% butter and 13% almond fat and 7% trans fats from Reese's peanut butter cups. It actually stays in your body almost the exact same way as you eat it. So that's kind of a cool, interesting thing about fat. And fat's an energy molecule. And fat tends to be a slow-burning energy molecule. It takes a while for the body to burn fat. So just to review super, super quick, carbohydrates you use them for energy. The body burns carbohydrates quickly. Proteins you use for energy and structure, and the body burns them pretty slowly. And fats you use mostly for energy, but you also use to build cell walls and things like that, and the body burns fat slowly. And those are the major places that we get energy from. You can also get energy from alcohol, interestingly enough, but for the most part, when we talk about energy nutrition, it's only carbs, fat, and protein. So the stuff that fuels us, the stuff that keeps us going, is really just combinations of these carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. And all different foods have different balances of these three nutrients. So if you look at something like a lean chicken breast, which was really hot during the obsessed with low-fat phase of nutrition that was like sometime during the late 80s and 90s, that's almost all protein. If you look at something like beans are an interesting balance. Beans have carbohydrates and protein and a tiny little bit of fat. If you look at, say, an apple is almost all sugars. There's virtually no protein in an apple, and there's virtually no fat in an apple. So different foods have different ratios. And then fatty meats and fatty fish tend to have protein and fat together. And there are very few foods you'll find that actually have all three, protein, fat, and carbs. It's really, really rare. For the most part, there's kind of one or two. You don't really find many foods that combine all three together. Avocados, maybe to a limited extent, a little bit of protein in there. So our bodies actually need all three molecules. You pretty much need carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. Some people with exceptional metabolisms don't need carbohydrates. So the Alaskan Inuit were this really well-studied group of people up near the North Pole who ate pretty much nothing but meat and blubber, and they were really healthy, and they never ate carbs, and they also never ate vegetables, and they were super healthy. And their bodies are different from most people's. Most of us need carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. There's no one on earth who can survive without fat and protein. Fat and protein are absolutely essential. What's interesting is that all of us need a different balance of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins in our diets. So if you think about a normal person's diet, say you are, you know, a 40-year-old woman or a 40-year-old man. 40-year-old woman with average activity levels needs maybe 1,800 calories. 40-year-old guy needs maybe 2,300, 2,400 calories in general. We don't want to worry too much about calories. Well, of those 1,800 calories, we'll go with the case of the woman, there is an ideal ratio of carbohydrate calories to fat calories to protein calories. There is an optimal balance for everyone's individual body of those three nutrients. So you could take one person, and of their 1,800 calories, they might really thrive and really feel great getting, say, 1,000 of those calories from carbohydrates, and then 400 from protein and 400 from fat. Another person would feel really lousy on that diet, and they would feel great getting 600 calories from protein, 600 calories from fat, and 600 calories from carbs, totally even balance. And yet a third person would feel better getting maybe like 200-300 calories from carbs and the rest from fat and protein. So all of us need different ratios of protein, fat, and carbs. And it is useful to put fat and protein in one camp, put them on one side of the aisle, and put carbohydrates on the other side of the aisle, and then figure out where you are between those two extremes. So carbohydrates, I mentioned, are really fast-burning nutrients. And some people's bodies thrive when they get most of their calories from those fast-burning nutrients. And we'll put them in one camp. We're going to call them carb-type metabolisms. And then the fats and proteins are slower-burning nutrients. And some people's bodies thrive when they eat mostly slower-burning nutrients. So we're going to put them in the other camp. We're going to call them fat-protein-type metabolisms. And then there are people who are really happy when they're in the middle. We'll call them mixed-type metabolisms. And all of us fall somewhere on that spectrum. And you can figure out which balance is right for you, and this is a really, really great thing to know. Because your energy levels and your appetite, how full you get after meals, how well your cells work, detoxification, preventing heart disease, inflammation, so many different things that we're concerned about with health and wellness are actually relevant to this idea of metabolic type. So why is it that we have different metabolic types? And it's useful to understand this before we talk a little bit about how to figure out what your personal metabolic type is. Well, different people's cells burn through the energy in food at different rates. And this is a big part of the reason that these metabolic types emerge. So some people have cells in their body that take the energy in food and rip the energy out of food really, really, really quickly, and then turn that food energy into usable chemical energy in the cell. So the minute food hits the body, the energy is like pulled out, and that energy is then put in the cells in a way that the cells can use. And we've talked a little bit in this course, we've emphasized it as a central point, that blood sugar stability is extremely important, and that when blood sugar gets too high too fast or too low too fast, we feel really crappy. We actually need blood sugar to stay regulated within relatively narrow ranges in order to feel good. Well, the same thing is actually true with cellular energy. So if your body is one of those bodies that takes energy out of the food that you eat and extracts it really quickly and gets it into a usable form, if you eat food that's super, super easy to digest and get the energy out of, you'll actually pull the energy out too quickly. And you'll get like a super rush of energy followed by a crash. And this is what happens to fat protein type metabolisms when they eat excessively carbohydrate loaded diets. So the fat protein type metabolism is a metabolism. The reason it likes fat and protein is because it's really good, it's really efficient at getting the energy out of the food that it eats. Now fat and protein digest slowly. They release their energy slowly. So if you take that slow-digesting nutrient that is fat, or that slow-digesting nutrient that is protein, and you put it into these fast-digesting cells, you have a perfect recipe. The fast-digesting cells with the slow-digesting nutrient creates a pretty balanced, pretty even flow of energy. And that's what we always want. We always want an even flow of energy. On the converse, you take your fat protein type metabolism, which likes to extract energy from food really, really, really fast, and you put in something like white rice, or you put in something like a mango, like a sugary tropical fruit eaten alone. Or you even take a brown rice meal, like brown rice with only a tiny bit of olive oil and maybe some broccoli and carrots. And that might seem like a pretty healthy meal, brown rice, broccoli, and carrots, right? Sounds great. Except the problem is brown rice digests pretty fast and carrots digest pretty fast. And you've now put those fast-digesting energy sources into cells that are really, really, really quick digesters. So you're going to get a rush of energy pulled out of the brown rice and carrots and delivered to the cells, and the cells are going to go into like overdrive or hyperdrive. You can almost picture it like an odometer on your car. The engine in those cells is going to rev up into the red range, and you don't want your engine in the red range. You want your engine in the happy middle range. That's when the engine's performing efficiently. So for our fat protein metabolizer, that brown rice, broccoli, and carrot meal really isn't so healthy, and they would be a lot better off with a meal that maybe many people would look at and think is unhealthy. They might actually be healthier eating a steak. Much, much better for them. And on the flip side, we can look at a carbohydrate-type metabolizer, and a carbohydrate-type metabolizer is the complete opposite. Their cells actually take a long time to get the energy out of food. So it's not that their metabolism is low. It's that the process by which food turns into energy in their cells is relatively slow. So if you take that carbohydrate-type metabolism and you put in a brown rice, broccoli, and carrot meal, now you've got a great recipe. You've got fast-digesting nutrients in slow-digesting cells, which is going to create an even flow of energy. And that even flow of energy is super healthy. But if you took our metaphorical steak, which is a big slow-digesting nutrient source, and you put it into those slow-digesting, carbohydrate-type metabolism cells, what you're going to get is kind of a sluggish, bogged-down inability to extract the energy from the foodstuff. So these are extreme examples that we're using to illustrate this phenomenon. But all of us fall somewhere on the spectrum, and you can begin to notice, starting tonight, starting tomorrow, whenever you listen to this recording, you can begin to notice how your body's responding to food pretty quickly based on whether you feel like you've been revved into overdrive or bogged down into Slugsville. So here's what it feels like. If you're a fat protein type and you eat a just carbohydrate meal or even a reasonably good-sized just carbohydrate snack, you'll tend to feel like a little wired, maybe a little edgy. You might find yourself eating almost compulsively. you'll have trouble controlling your appetite, and you can get even more hungry after you start eating, and then you won't be consistently full, and you'll want to eat more, and you may also experience the surge crash phenomenon, where you feel better, and 15 or 30 minutes later, you're like bogged down, tired, difficulty focusing, really not feeling so great. So that's what happens to the fat protein type metabolism when that fat protein metabolizer eats a really fast digesting meal. Because again, you got this fast digesting meal going into fast digesting cells, which is a recipe for over fast energy extraction from that food. So you're going to get an energy surge followed by an energy crash. And that's what it feels like. On the flip side, we take our hypothetical carbohydrate type metabolizer and you have them eat a 12-ounce steak with butter. And you'll get a sort of dull, sluggish, bloated, sometimes it's described as overfull and yet somehow not satisfied feeling. And if you get that feeling, it's because your slow digesting cells are having a really tough time processing through those big, heavy, slow digesting nutrients. So you can sort of think through your own personal history right now and begin to get a sense of what it's like for you. Are you someone who can get up on a Sunday morning and go to brunch and have a 3-egg omelet with bacon and have a slice of ham steak and some salmon lox and some other heavy nutrients and then maybe polish it off with something containing heavy cream and actually feel relatively good and go take a walk and have energy and focus? You're probably a fat protein type metabolizer. On the other hand, that fat protein type metabolizer at our hypothetical Sunday brunch, maybe a brunch buffet, if you eat, say, a couple Belgian waffles or a couple pancakes, do you feel unsatisfied and weird and edgy, and then you like need to eat the omelet and need to eat the salmon? And if you were going to try to fill up on the pancakes, you'd have to eat like 6 pancakes and slather them in butter. Great indicator you're a fat protein type metabolism. If you can go to that Sunday brunch and eating the omelet or eating, you know, the heavy cut of meat would make you feel really sluggish, but you can pop up and you can have like a couple pieces of fruit and you feel good for 2 or 3 hours. And then for lunch, you can have something really light, like you know yourself. You can eat like a macrobiotic meal. You can order brown rice and broccoli. You can get a wrap. You can get like a sprouted grain wrap with alfalfa sprouts and a tiny little bit of hummus, and you feel good. You almost invariably have a carbohydrate type metabolism. So we are going to test this week. There's a PDF. It should already be posted to the course website. If not, I'll make sure it gets posted. And what it recommends that you do is if you don't already know the answer to what is your metabolic type, you're going to try some different breakfasts, and you're going to see how your body reacts to those different breakfasts. And the three breakfasts are really simple. One breakfast is just a whole grain with virtually nothing added to it, tiny little bit of fat. So it's like brown rice or quinoa. Another breakfast is all protein fat. It's breakfast meat or eggs. And then the third breakfast is the happy middle ground, chickpeas and olive oil. Chickpeas with olive oil is a fat protein carb balance. And not that you want to eat these foods for breakfast the rest of your life, but breakfast is a really useful meal to sort of tune in and figure out things about your metabolism. You're going to try these different breakfasts on different days and then really watch over the course of the next 2 to 3 hours, how are your energy levels? How satisfied do you stay? How do you feel emotionally, and do you notice any weird things going on in your body? Does your nose get stuffy? Do you get heartburn? Do you feel strange? And those are all really good indicators of how well you're eating for your metabolic type. A meal that is well balanced for your individual metabolism will tend to keep you full for 2 to 4 hours, really three, maybe even 3 to 5 hours. Your energy levels will stay consistent. You won't feel sluggish. You should have a reasonably positive emotional reaction to the meal. You should sort of feel like, ah, as a response to eating. And your body should feel good. Nothing should sort of go out of whack. A meal that's metabolically imbalanced, you'll feel bad one way or another. One really, really simple trick, and you may know this one, you may be able to reference this one in your brain already, is how you react if you're hungry and you eat, say, a bag of chips or you eat bread. If you go to a restaurant and you're hungry and you eat a slice of bread, do you get hungrier and want to eat more bread, or does the bread actually fill you up a little bit? If you're hungry and you eat a bag of chips, do you get hungrier and do you want to eat more chips, or do the chips actually fill you up a little bit? And if the chips fill you up or if the bread fills you up, carbohydrate-type metabolism. If it doesn't, protein-type metabolism. So great to start narrowing down. Now, the category I haven't talked about much yet is this mixed metabolic type. And the mixed metabolic types, and actually mixed metabolism is probably the most common, they do pretty well no matter what they do. Mixed metabolic types, you can sort of get away with anything, but you kind of feel better when you eat right in the middle, and you tend to prefer one end of the spectrum. So if you're listening to this and you sort of say, you know, I can kind of handle any of those meals and nothing gets me down too much, you're probably a mixed metabolizer, which is easier. It's easy to eat in a mixed metabolic type range. And the thing is, you're always going to feel best with a pretty equal balance of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. So what do different meals look like then? Well, you have a lot of variability. You will do great with the sort of brown rice, fish, and vegetable type meal, vegetables with olive oil. The fish will be protein, the olive oil and the veggies a little bit of fat, and the brown rice is going to be a little bit of carbohydrates for you. You can do things like sprouted grain wraps and brown rice wraps for lunch. You'll be much, much better with those combinations of healthful types of breads, maybe with meat and vegetables. That's going to be pretty well balanced for you. And it's easiest to eat this way. The other types, what does carbohydrate types day look like? Lots of grains, lots of fruits, maybe protein from nuts and seeds, and a little more bias towards the vegetarian end of the spectrum. If you're a fat protein type, it's really tough to be a vegetarian. Your day is going to include things like organic breakfast sausages, and cuts of meat, and cuts of fish, and more nuts, and a little more oil. And organic butter is probably actually a really good thing for you. You may be able to get away with more dairy in your life. So the different metabolic types really present a spectrum of profoundly different nutritional needs. And once you get this concept, I feel like it demystifies a lot of people's struggles with nutrition. One, it absolutely puts the kibosh on the idea that there's like a diet that's good for everyone. And it's interesting in nutrition. There's a great lecturer, I forget his name, but he teaches this this course called Diets Are a Lot Like Religions. And you first hear it and you think it's a funny concept, but the more he goes into it, it starts to be like eerily true. He's like, you know, you've got like the experts and they have like their you know, their titles and their clothing, and then you've got the orthodoxy, which is like the American Heart Association and the RDA, and then you've got, you know, the alternative schools. But then the part that I like most when he talks about it is it's really funny because when people get into a diet, they start trying to convert everyone to it. They like proselytize, and you've got books and you've got materials. So you've probably known people in your life who are like, vegetarianism is the answer, and it also becomes a moral answer. It becomes a solution to the ills of our society. And then other people think raw foods is the answer, and macrobiotics is the answer, and the zone, and South Beach, and Atkins, and different things gain ascendancy in our culture and become hot and faddish, and the magazines talk about them. And it's really kind of funny when you send back and watch it. And it's also completely absurd, because there are these individual differences in requirements, and truthfully, they go even deeper than just the simple metabolic typing. This is just one concept that gets into the individualization of nutrition. But once you get this concept, it's obviously a really, really bad idea to think that there's one diet that's good for everyone. I mean, vegetarian diets are a godsend for some people. And other people are in a place metabolically where a vegetarian diet is going to be really difficult for them to not feel rotten on and probably dangerous for their health. And if they're committed to that vegetarian diet for ethical reasons, they need to really know what they're doing. They need to either be very educated about nutrition, or they need to work with a nutritionist to understand how to get them the heavy, slow-burning nutrients from vegetable sources that their metabolism craves. So this can sound a little complex. The simplicity that I want you to take away from it is that the way your body feels tells you whether you're eating right for your metabolic type. You can trust that. When you feel stable energy, when your appetite feels stable on what seem like reasonable portions to you, when you have a positive response to a meal, it's a meal that's right for your metabolism. And if you just learn to begin eating based on the way that you feel for the 3 to 5 hours after you eat, not counting sugar buzzes and drug highs, that alone will serve you very well in life. You really just tune in. Does the way I'm eating make me feel good? And if it makes you feel good now and you don't crash later, it's great. If you crash later, you've eaten some sort of drug-like food. Like if you eat 10 Krispy Kremes, you might feel good for a little while, but you're going to crash and feel rotten later. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about food that you eat, and you feel good while you're eating it, and you feel good after you eat it, and you never crash. And if you begin to run your life based on that, it's awesome. And then just start to notice, you know, wow, what did I eat? Did I eat a bunch of beans? I feel great when I eat beans. Well, beans are really metabolically balanced, and I notice I feel even better when I add some avocado. Good to know. I'm probably a mixed metabolic type towards the fat protein end of the spectrum. On the other hand, you know what? I feel amazing when I eat lamb. Oh, lamb just fills me up. I can eat lamb twice a week, and I feel awesome when I eat lamb. And that dinner that's just lamb and vegetables cooked in butter makes me feel really, really good. Hello, fat protein type metabolism. So you begin to know yourself, and you eat according to how you feel, and you pay a lot less attention to anything else. And it's wonderful. And if you can do that inside the umbrella of the ideas of whole foods and of diet of abundance, you'll be serving your body well and taking your health in a positive direction. So that is all I want to say about metabolic typing and about macronutrient ratios. Any questions, as always, email info@vaughngray.com. I want to move on to what are called micronutrients now, which is another thing that I think is really, really awesome for people to understand. And micronutrients are like vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients. And this is the other half of nutrition. So micronutrients aren't energy molecules. Micronutrients are nutrients that our bodies need to do all the things that keep us alive. And that's really what vitamins and minerals and other stuff are about. So we all have heard the term vitamin, and we've all heard the term mineral, and we've all heard, you know, probably at this point about phytonutrients and antioxidants and proanthocyanins and all these other terms that no one understands yet. And we want to break all that down tonight and talk a little bit about what your individual needs are. So the first thing that I want to say about vitamins and minerals is that most of us don't get enough, not even close to enough. And we don't get enough for a couple reasons. One is the depletion of soil quality. So most of the food that we eat is raised on very large farms that are sort of agro-business farms. And that style of farming tends to leach a lot of the minerals out of the soil, and the soils aren't as healthy, and as a result, the nutrition doesn't end up in the food. In addition, a lot of the vitamins especially can deteriorate, and with increased shelf life, the vitamins deteriorate, and with food processing smashes vitamins. Vitamins really lose a lot of their potency as they're progressively more processed. So a lot of Americans are deficient in vitamins and minerals. And we have these recommended daily allowances from the U.S. government, these RDAs. And a lot of people kind of look and they say, do I get my RDA of vitamin C? Do I get my RDA of vitamin D3? Well, the thing about RDAs is they were created when nutrition science was really about studying acute diseases based on nutritional deficiencies. So nutritionists would look and they would say, we know there's this disease called scurvy that people get if they don't get enough vitamin C. This is what sailors used to get and why they called the British limeys and why the British would eat limes, because vitamin C prevents scurvy. So they thought to themselves, let's really figure out how much vitamin C you need not to get scurvy. And then based on numbers in that range, they made up a recommended daily allowance. It's enough to keep you from not getting scurvy. Then they went through and there's other things like rickets is a vitamin D deficiency. Pellagra is a disease that's a deficiency of vitamin B3 or niacin. And there are deficiency diseases for virtually every vitamin. If you don't get these things, you die, which is why they're called vitamins. Vitamins is short for vital amines. Amines are nitrogen-based compounds. So the RDA, almost every American gets the RDA for vitamins. But I love what Linus Pauling said, and it's a little bit cynical, but I don't think it's too far from accurate. Linus Pauling, the only guy to ever win a science Nobel Prize and the Nobel Peace Prize, he said that the recommended daily allowances for vitamins are enough to keep you barely alive in ordinary poor health. And it's a pretty reasonable statement, barely alive in ordinary poor health. You're not going to develop some clinical syndrome that's going to kill you, but your body's not going to thrive either, and mostly we don't get enough of these guys. So what's the answer? Well, the best way, best way to get vitamins and minerals, no question, is eat a whole foods diet. And eat lots and lots of brightly colored vegetables and around 2-fist-sized portions a day of brightly colored fruits and vary up what you eat. So if you're eating lots of celery and peppers and lettuces and greens and broccoli and cabbage and filling your life with healthy veggies and getting some fruits in there as well, and then eating a reasonable sprinkling of the other whole foods that we've talked about, nuts, seeds, grains, meats, etc., and you're not a vegetarian, you're going to get a pretty good amount of most of the vitamins and minerals that you need. Maybe still not enough, and that's why we're going to talk about the logic of vitamin and mineral supplementation. Now, if you don't eat perfectly, vitamin and mineral supplementation becomes profoundly more important. And so there's this big question that's always out there, should we take a multivitamin, multimineral? Should everyone take multivitamin, multiminerals? I really believe pretty much everybody should take multivitamin, multiminerals. Now, part of the reason for that is because of the soil depletion phenomenon and because the food that we get isn't as fresh as our ancestors got. But also, interestingly, we probably need more vitamins and minerals than our ancestors needed. And the reason for that is a lot of what these vitamins and minerals do is they're antioxidants. They buffer the effects of pollution, of damaging molecules in our bodies, and we live in a more polluted world. So we could run through all the different vitamins and minerals, but that would take forever. I don't want to do it. As a general rule, we really need more. I do want to highlight two specifically. I want to highlight vitamin D, and I want to highlight vitamin B12, because I think that deficiency of those two is probably the most common, and they make a lot of sense to supplement. Also, vitamin C is great, but everyone knows about vitamin C. So taking a vitamin C supplement is awesome. Take one that has rose hips in it, or take something called food-derived vitamin C. Otherwise, it won't work. So vitamin C with rose hips or food-derived. That's natural vitamin C. It's not totally synthetic vitamin C. If it's totally synthetic, it won't work. That's all I need to say about vitamin C. But vitamin B12 and vitamin D3 are under-supplemented and really necessary. Vitamin B12 is an essential nutrient. If you don't get it, you can't live. And you really only need very small amounts of it, but it's very hard to absorb. And many people have deficiencies of it, and that leads to low energy levels. Low energy is like a big-time symptom of vitamin B12 deficiency. And you get B12 only in animal sources. There's no vegetarian sources of B12. So vegetarians especially have to be super, super careful about supplementing with vitamin B12. Now, even for most meat eaters, a lot of times they have problems with absorption. So you can't really absorb vitamin B12 when you swallow it, but you can absorb it what's called sublingually. You can buy vitamin B12 supplements that are built to dissolve underneath your tongue. That's called a sublingual vitamin B12, and I'm a big advocate of this. It's very affordable. If your energy levels are low, I really recommend taking one of these lozenges every day, and it's a vitamin that it's very difficult to get enough of from the diet. So if you go on reevolutionstore.com, we have a really good, affordably priced sublingual vitamin B12, and pretty much any sublingual vitamin B12 you buy is going to be great. Now, vitamin D is another almost universally deficient vitamin. And the major reason for that is lack of adequate sunlight exposure, especially in winter. The body naturally produces vitamin D3 in response to the sun, and it's healthy. And we've become sun phobes in our culture. We sort of have this, you know, don't go in the sun, any sun exposure is bad, it causes skin cancer, and that's completely crazy. A reasonable level of sunlight exposure is really good for you. And what a reasonable level is varies from person to person, just like nutrition does. But we should all be getting some sun exposure. We should all be outside, and we spend so much time indoors. It's not natural, and it's not particularly healthful. And one of the ways that we can complement that is by taking vitamin D. So with vitamin B12, the sublingual lozenge is going to get you more than enough. With vitamin D3, there are individual differences in terms of requirements. For the average Caucasian in winter, I recommend at least 3,000, better 5,000 international units of vitamin D a day. International unit is just a weird made-up thing by which vitamin D levels are measured. You'll see it everywhere. So that's a higher dose than a lot of the tablets, and take a lot of tablets that come in 1,000 IU tablets. Take 3 to 5 tablets. You're not going to hurt yourself. Vitamin D overdosing is extremely difficult. There's only been a few cases ever reported, and at that level, you're really in no danger. If you are an African American in winter, you may need a lot more vitamin D. And if you get sick a lot, and if you don't feel good, and if your energy levels are low, it might be worth having your vitamin D levels checked. And you may need to be on as much as 20,000 or 25,000 international units of vitamin D a day. But as a general rule, African Americans living in cold, low sunlight environments need more vitamin D. And the reason is that black skin is far more effective at neutralizing the effects of the sun, and as a result, not as much vitamin D gets produced. So there's these individual variations in dietary vitamin D requirements. But 5,000 IUs a day is really, really safe. So if you're thinking about a supplement regimen, I think it's a very, very good idea to consider being on a multivitamin and then taking additional sublingual B12 and additional vitamin D3. They're very good for you. Most people are deficient in these nutrients, and cost really isn't a factor. A good vitamin D3 is $10 or less per month. A good vitamin B12 is around the same range, and a good multivitamin should be around $20 a month and no more than that. And quality does matter. You don't want to just buy them anywhere. So that's all I really want to say about vitamins and minerals. If you supplement those guys, you're going to be in pretty good shape. There are some other specific minerals that you could think about. Selenium is a wonderful antioxidant. If you're someone who's really focused on anti-aging, you don't need to buy selenium. Just eat Brazil nuts, very, very rich in Brazil nuts. We could definitely discuss other vitamins and minerals if any of you are interested and you have questions. Please email them in. But I want to move on to other specific nutrient requirements that people have, and we're going to wrap up with that, and then a really, really brief discussion of some very common specific, what I call nutritional pathologies. So beyond the vitamins and minerals, which is micronutrition, it's the little stuff that the body needs. It's not really about energy. There are other things that are super, super helpful to take in through the diet to sort of round out nutritional health. The absolute number one supplement, the supplement that I consider most essential, the supplement that I think literally virtually every human being on earth should take. There are only exceptions based on medication, rare genetics, or extreme diets. But virtually everyone should supplement with fish oil, with a high omega-3 fish oil. What fish oil does for the body is it provides essential fats that help build healthy brain cells. They help reduce inflammation profoundly. They help support mood. And there's really no way to get these essential fats from your diet unless you eat truly free-range meats, like wild game-type meats, or you consume an extraordinary quantity of wild-caught fish. Very, very difficult to get the healthy omega-3 fats. They've been much in the media. Omega-3 fat consumption is completely proven to be awesome for heart disease. Taking supplemental omega-3s is vastly more effective than any medical drug for heart disease, vastly more effective. And the only reason we even prescribe a lot of these medical drugs instead of just prescribing omega-3s, it's all about institutionalized medicine and drug companies making money. Don't like to be cynical. I don't like to point my finger at people, but in this case, it's really, really true. All the drugs that people take, the beta blockers and the Lipitor, et cetera, in the vast majority of cases, they're nowhere near as effective, and this is well established. They are nowhere near as effective as omega-3 supplementation. Omega-3 supplements prevent heart attacks. Everyone agrees. The American Heart Association agrees. You can't get into trouble saying this. It's one of the few supplements that you can stand on a soapbox, cry the praises of, say that it actually prevents and reverses heart disease, and the government won't come after you because everybody's on board. So I'm a huge fan of fish oil, huge fan of omega-3s. Pretty much everyone should take them. How do you find the right amount for you, and how do you find a good one? Well, the first thing is, let's start with how you find the good omega-3s. You need to find an omega-3 supplement that is a minimum of 50% EPA and DHA. EPA and DHA are the chemicals in fish oil that deliver, that are proven to deliver the heart health benefits. If it's less than 50% EPA and DHA, it is a budget fish oil. And a lot of times if you go to like your local drugstore or whatever, you'll find fish oils that'll have like 300 milligrams of EPA and DHA in a 1200 milligram capsule. That's awful. It's like 25%. It's a terrible, terrible percentage. So you always want to see, and you can see on the nutrition facts on the back, at least 50% of the capsule size is pure EPA and DHA. You also want to read that it's molecularly distilled. Molecular distillation is the most effective way to remove toxins. And all fish oils are purified, but some of them are not molecularly distilled. One of the big tests that I really encourage people to make, and it's a little bit disgusting, but you only need to do it once, is when you buy a fish oil, cut open the capsule and dribble the fish oil in a spoon and taste it. And if it tastes awful to you, it's a bad fish oil. If it tastes like biting or rancid or whatever, spit it out right away and don't use that fish oil. On the other hand, it can taste a little bit fishy, a little bit. You don't want it to be like reeking of fish. A little bit fishy is okay. But it should taste relatively clear and pure. And if you want to do this test for yourself, I'll mention to you a few brands and buy a really high-quality fish oil. We have one on our store, the Revolution Store. It's a great fish oil called True Omega-3. Wonderful, wonderful brand. You know, buy a bottle of True Omega-3 and then go to whatever your local drugstore is and buy a bottle or your local bulk warehouse and taste them both. And you'll notice a tremendous difference. One of them tastes kind of fresh, it's clear, and the other one probably you're going to want to spit out. It's going to be really disgusting. So those are ways to identify quality fish oils. In terms of how much you need to take, if you have heart disease or you're at risk for heart disease, so you're an older person who has high cholesterol or high triglycerides, especially high triglycerides, you probably want to take about 3 grams of omega-3 a day, which is going to translate to around 5 or 6 capsules of a high-quality omega-3. So maybe 3 capsules in the morning, 3 capsules at night. And remember, about half of a high-quality fish oil is EPA DHA. So 3 grams of EPA DHA is usually about 6 1,000-milligram capsules. So if you're really at risk for heart disease, high triglycerides, high cholesterol, you're an older person or you have a family history, around 6. If you're an average guy or, you know, around 180, 190 pounds, or if you're a woman who is a little bit older or who has some sort of heart health concern, I recommend 4 capsules of fish oil per day, providing around 2 grams of EPA and DHA. And if you're young and healthy, or if you're a smaller person, if you only weigh 130 pounds, and if you have, you know, really no worries about heart disease, just take 2. Take 1 fish oil capsule in the morning and 1 fish oil capsule at night. So there's pretty much no other supplement you can take that you can expect as much benefit from. Long term, it's great for mood. It's not going to make you feel better in a month, but in the long term, it supports the development of a healthy brain. Fantastic for heart health. It's anti-inflammatory, and inflammation is at the core of so much disease and so much of the aging process. So omega-3s are just, I literally want to start a campaign to get everyone in America to take these things. We have a website, and we built a business called Prevent 1 Million. And the whole idea behind Prevent 1 Million is if we got 1 million Americans who are currently not taking omega-3 fish oil to start today, in 10 years, we would prevent 1 million heart attacks. It's an astonishing statistic, absolutely astonishing. And that's based on compiling the data from a lot of different studies about just how, and of course these are high-risk people. If we got 1 million teenagers taking omega-3, we wouldn't prevent 1 million heart attacks. But if we got 1 million people who are at risk for heart disease taking these things who currently are, we'd prevent 1 million heart attacks. And that's amazing. That's far more effective than any medical drug. So there's my pitch. Take high-quality fish oil. It's so good for you. I think through the Re-Evolution store, we have an auto-shipping program that really discounts this stuff. Frequently, these super high-quality fish oils can run like 50, 60 bucks a bottle. And you, if you sign up for this program, we ship you a month. We ship you a three-month supply every 3 months, and I think it comes to about $22, $23 a month. So we try to make it affordable because it's very important for health. Okay, beyond omega-3s, there are a couple other supplements that I think are almost universally great for people. And the first one I want to talk about is probiotics. So if you have any kind of digestive issues, like you get gas or you have trouble with bowel regularity or you get frequent heartburn, one of the things that might be going on is you might not have enough healthy bacteria in your gut. And you've probably seen commercials over the last 5-10 years for all these different, you know, Activia shakes and probiotic milkshakes and things like that. And there's really something to it. There's really something to this idea of taking the bacteria, the healthy bacteria that are a normal part of our gut ecology, and adding them into our diet. And the reason is we've killed off the healthy bugs in our bodies with antibiotics. And we get sick, you get a cold, you take antibiotics. We never really realized when we were first starting to prescribe these things left and right that there are these healthy bugs that keep our bodies free from other diseases, that fight off fungi, that help digest things, that help assimilate nutrients, that help actually make vitamins. And these healthy bacteria, these healthy bugs live in our guts. And when you deplete that population, our health suffers, and especially our digestive health suffers. So the whole idea of probiotics is they're actual supplements that provide healthy bacteria to sort of restock or replenish the stores down in your gastrointestinal tract. And there are many, many great brands of healthy probiotics. Natren is a wonderful company you can find at Whole Foods or most health food stores. If you don't mind dairy, if you don't have any kind of dairy intolerance, BioK makes a little probiotic shake. That's absolutely fabulous. You can take BioK shakes. We have a really nice probiotic on our storefront as well. It's great. And I actually think it's a wonderful idea to vary up the probiotics that you take. You should rotate between different brands because they all have different strains of bacteria, and ultimately the more bacteria you get in your body, the better, the more healthy bacteria. So probiotics are awesome if you have digestive issues. The other supplement that I think is so wonderful when you have digestive issues is digestive enzymes. Digestive enzymes are external sources of the same chemicals that your body uses to break down food. So when you eat food, your pancreas, which is an organ just below your stomach, makes this cocktail of chemistry that's designed to actually take the food that you've eaten and split it apart and turn it into the nutrients that your body can absorb and send out to your cells to then be used to make you healthy and keep you alive and make new cells. And digestive enzymes are critical. Without them, you can't live. And they do lots of other great tasks. They're part of your immune system. They actually help fight cancer cells and in the digestive tract. And many people are deficient in digestive enzymes. This is a big one with heartburn. If you get acid reflux or GERD or heartburn, very high probability that you're deficient in digestive enzymes. So you can buy digestive enzymes, and they're not too expensive, and there's lots and lots of good brands of these guys as well. And you just want to take a digestive enzyme capsule about two-thirds of the way through your meal. And you want to do it with each meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So if you have any kind of digestive issues, really recommend the enzymes. Give them a try. You'll probably notice a difference within a month. If you start enzymes and probiotics, within a month you should notice a difference. And the way you want to take them, take your probiotics first thing in the morning on an empty stomach, wash them down with water, maybe take two capsules, and then take one digestive enzyme serving, one capsule if you get ours, or if you buy another one, whatever the serving size is. Take that about two-thirds of the way through each meal, and you should really notice a difference in digestive health in a month. They're both fabulous supplements. The last supplement that I wanted to highlight in our talk on individual nutrition is liver detox supplements. And these are the guys that have gotten the least attention in our culture that I think are the most missed. So the liver is the workhorse of the body. It's sort of your do-everything superstar. It makes a lot of the chemistry in your body. It synthesizes loads of proteins. And it detoxes all the harmful stuff that would otherwise kill you. And your cells are always making waste. Every cell in the body makes waste. And just like your whole body makes waste and secretes it as urine and feces, your cells make waste. And a lot of that waste is really toxic. And the liver is the place where that toxic stuff gets broken down and rendered harmless so it doesn't hurt you. Our livers these days are really under assault. So the human liver was mostly built to take care of what are called endotoxins, which are those toxins I just talked about that your body makes as a normal process of metabolism. The body never anticipated preservatives and pesticides and chemistry and pollution and exhaust and heavy metals and the sort of toxic sea of goop that we're exposed to as a consequence of our industrialization and all of our kind of haphazard use of chemistry without really considering the health implications. And the human liver is under assault from all this stuff, and many people's livers aren't kind of working up to par. And when the liver isn't working up to par, you can't detox efficiently. Now, the first thing that happens with this is loss of skin luster and skin aging. Because when your detox system is overwhelmed, you start to actually clear toxins out through your skin. And a lot of people who don't like the way that their skin looks, they have trouble tanning in response to the sun, or their skin's cracked, or it's frail, or it looks older than they think it is. And billions, of maybe more than billions, maybe trillions of dollars, I don't know, internationally, are spent on all sorts of different skin treatments on the outside, creams and powders, and if you count makeup, I'm sure it's trillions, all to make our skin look healthier. Well, why not make it healthier from the inside and make our bodies healthier? Stop clearing toxins through your skin. Improve your liver health, and your liver can break those toxins down. How do you do it? Well, liver function supplements are supplements that protect your liver from being damaged by toxins. They're actually antioxidants, and they're antioxidants that hang out around liver cells and mop up the dangerous molecules that kill liver cells. So my two favorites are dandelion, good old dandelion, like you'd pick out in a field, except you want to eat dandelion greens with your salad, or you want to buy powdered dandelion root as a supplement. So dandelion greens, you can get them at health food stores, you can add them into your salads, and they're a liver function supplement. They're great for liver health. Or you can buy powdered dandelion root. And actually, any bitter green is good for liver health. So collard greens are good, turnip greens, mustard greens, all good for you. So big fan of the dandelion. And there's another thing called milk thistle or silymarin that's wonderful. And you can buy milk thistle as a supplement. And if you take liver function supplements for about 3 months, frequently you'll notice that your skin will get better. A lot of people really find it makes a difference. And even if it doesn't make a difference in your skin, you've done your body some good. So I encourage people that I work with one-on-one and people who take my classes to try 3 months of a liver function supplement. And many milk thistles you can buy are great brands. Dandelion root or eating dandelion greens is wonderful. I actually created a liver detox kit that I call Live Enhance. It's two supplements. It's a milk thistle that's charged with a couple other herbs, and then it's dandelion. And if you buy it, you get both together as a combo kit. And I'm a fan of that product as well. Of course, I designed it, so I really like that guy. But liver function supplements are a wonderful idea, great for antioxidant, anti-aging effects. So that is our picture for tonight of individualized nutrition. The first part is metabolic typing. Understanding carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, these macronutrients, and getting that different ratios of those nutrients are going to be ideal for your individual body. After those macronutrients, you've got the micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, and really the take-home message is we probably don't get enough. A multivitamin is great. The more fruits you eat, the more vegetables you eat, the better, especially the vegetables. And B12 and D3 are probably the best to supplement. And then you've got these other supplements that can be wonderful to add. And fish oil is just the superstar. It's the no-brainer that pretty much everybody should take. Now, beyond this, there are certainly more topics that we can explore in terms of individualized nutrition. Different people do have different nutrition needs that are beyond the scope of tonight's discussion. And especially if you've got some sort of clinical syndrome going on, or if you know you have very high inflammation levels, or if gastrointestinal issues are a huge deal for you, or if you struggle with any sort of neurological or psychological issues, there may be really specific nutrition programs that could benefit you. And I really encourage you to email me, and we can talk about those, or email, or I can get in touch personally. But if you just apply the concepts from tonight inside of the broader context of diet of abundance and eating whole foods, you'll be well on your way. I really believe that just the diet of abundance concept, the whole foods concept, metabolic typing, and understanding a little bit about supplements, that's like 85% of all the useful nutrition knowledge. And the other 15% is, I think, just persnickety detail. I think you could study nutrition for like 7-8 years, and you'd learn a lot of persnickety detail that isn't as valuable as those simple, simple concepts that we've gone over in like maybe 3 of these classes. So hope tonight's lecture was really valuable. We're back on track now. We're going to be having class the next 3 weeks consistently. This is actually the end of what I would call the core curriculum of this class. This class was originally a 6-session class that just covered this stuff. And our next 3 classes are kind of bonus classes, and they're really cool classes. There's one on detox, there's one on GI health, and there's one on sort of big picture, wrapping everything up together and bringing it all together, and sort of seeing your life and health and nutrition from a totally different angle. So I hope you've enjoyed all this core content so far. And I really encourage you, I know we had this long break, especially with the technical difficulties, I really encourage you, I know many of you are out there just on the MP3s, really check in, you know, send a note in, drop me a line, get in touch, let's make sure we're all on the same page, and then we can bring together all the different things that we've talked about over the course of this entire series, and really put them into place so that you move forward from having taken this course in a positive direction. So that is a wrap for tonight's class. If I can answer any questions, I am happy to.
The multivitamin, do you recommend any particular brand or anything in particular for a woman?
Yeah, absolutely. So with multivitamins, it's a really a question of personal needs. We have a vitamin on our website that I think is a really great value multivitamin. I'd say it's a premium multivitamin at a good price. It is not a Rolls Royce. So our multivitamin is quite good, and it's about the best you can do for like the $18 range, which is around where it sells. And if you look on the back, what you want to see with multivitamins in that range, and there are other very good brands too, you want to not just look and see that it has vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin K. They're all going to have that. You want to see a lot of what's called whole foods nutrition or food-based nutrition. You want to see a lot of actual extracts from real food. And the reason you want to see that is that vitamins that are just made in labs don't work. Almost all multivitamins have components that are made in labs, but when those are combined with stuff that actually comes out of nature, it makes them far more effective. And so if you look through the vitamin that we have, it has all sorts of extracts from artichokes and various herbals and things like that in nature, and that's usually a pretty good indicator that some real thought and quality and care went into the vitamin, as opposed to just a string of vitamins and minerals. Now, the best vitamins are 100% organic, whole foods-based vitamins, and New Chapter is a company that makes those, as do Mega Foods Whole Foods vitamins, and you can find both of those at health food stores. The issue is that you're looking at something like $90 a month, maybe $100 a month for your multivitamin, as opposed to $20 a month. So if you're someone who's sick or someone for whom money isn't an option, I always point in the direction of the whole foods, multi-foods vitamins. They're just irreplaceable. But if you're someone who's just looking for a nutritional insurance policy and you just want to make sure you get all the vitamins and minerals, I love our brand. It's called Life's Vitality, and I think it's like the best value multivitamin, which is why we stocked it. I mean, we found it because we could offer it at a price that was kind of competitive with a lot of the $35 and $40 vitamins, but we sold it around $20 instead.
Okay. And the dandelion root and milk thistle thing, do you have information on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So with dandelion root, one thing is dandelion greens are great. And if you can get them at your local grocery store and add them into salads, they're really, really effective. Now, the dandelion root, if you want to just add dandelion root, it's very cost effective. And Nature's Way sells a dandelion root that's like $4 a bottle that you should be able to find at any health food store, and it's a really great product, and it's affordable, and there's no reason on earth not to use it. The milk thistle, to get quality milk thistle, you usually have to spend a little bit more. That same company, Nature's Way, makes a 2x potency milk thistle that you can buy, and you can combine both of those together, and it's a good product. The Live Enhance kit that I have on the web is also a good product. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend it over what you could buy at the health food stores. I mean, I don't want to just promote the products that we have. What we've got on the web is great. That said, you know, Nature's Way Milk Thistle and Nature's Way Dandelion are really great products too. So if you don't think you're gung-ho about the liver function support and you want to invest in some supplements, I'd say put the money into fish oil and get a vitamin and then pick up that dandelion root for like $4 at your local health food store and just take 2 capsules a day for 3 months and you'll be doing your liver some good for virtually no cost. Yeah, it's Nature's Way Dandelion Root.
Nature's Way or Nature's Made?
Nature's Way. It's not Nature Made is a different company. Nature Made is actually a good supplement company, but this is Nature's Way. And Nature's Way supplements, as a general rule, I believe, are one of the best values for herbal supplements. They do lots of different herbals, and they're quality herbals, and they don't charge a lot for them. So I like Nature's Way as a company. I think they're usually pretty dependable.
Okay. And then you said with the vitamin C, it should have rose hips or what else in it?
It should have rose hips, or it should be what's called a food-based or food-derived vitamin C. And if you, what I would actually recommend, if you're going to get the fish oil, and the biggest product that we have that I recommend is the fish oil, tack on the vitamin C on our site, because it's a rose hips vitamin C, and it's super, super cheap. And then the other stuff, if you're going to pick up the dandelion, get that at a health food store. Because our vitamin C, it's good stuff. It's rose hip fortified, really, really fresh, high potency.
Okay.
Yeah, it's reevolutionstore.com. That's our store, if you ever want to log on and check the stuff out there.
Okay.
And actually, since you know Gary, too, you can always call Gary and put in an order if you want to.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm slowly getting into this, so it's one step at a time. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I don't want to purchase everything at once and be hit all at once. I need to... Yeah, I've been doing the omega-3s and the things you've been talking to me about, but I have more bottles laying around than...
Well, then that's the thing. I mean, you don't want to confuse yourself.
Right.
And if you've already got a bunch of different supplements and you want to add in the liver stuff, go with the dandelion greens. Add them in as food.
Okay. All right. So I guess that's it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we will call it a wrap for tonight in that case. Thank you for being on the call live, and to everybody who is on MP3, I look forward to hearing from you guys, and I hope all is well.
Okay. Thanks.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.